The Jim Graham Building with the WPTF Weekend Gardener. We're in the midst of cranking up the Greek Festival for day number two. Starts, I guess they open up the doors at 11 o'clock. There's a lot of things going on here in preparation for all of you coming in to eat this unbelievable array of food that they have here, sweet and whatnot. And Johnny, you ate a cookie.
Yeah, I'm not, I can't remember which one that was.
Yeah.
It was good. I just know that.
Rufus had something that had some chocolate on it.
I think that was a chocolate-covered baklava. I think they said that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So
I had this one.
John Constantelis is with us. And, John, you have a big role in organizing this. Are you the chairman?
Yes, sir. I am the chairman. This is our 41st Raleigh Greek Festival.
41st, wow. So we've, I know WPTF or Curtis Media has had a long association going back many years, and we're so glad to be back here.
Well, I'm glad to have
with
you here.
With you folks, and it's such an extravaganza. A lot of tables here, I was told that it took about a week to set up all this stuff?
Yeah, so from where you're sitting and you're looking across the Jim Graham Building, that length of the building, there's about 1,200 tables from last count, and just from a seating perspective. Or we can seat 1,200 people, excuse me. So, yeah, the logistics, if you saw where you're standing, this floor was completely empty on Monday morning.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, it was crazy. You know, there was a lot of forklifts, a lot of people running around with tables and chairs. And this went from Tuesday until yesterday at about 3 o'clock is when we actually finished setup before the first set of customers came in at around 5 p.m.
Oh, a lot of cleaning, too.
Absolutely.
People eating and, and cooking and I don't know how in the world.
Everything you see, all the equipment that's back in the kitchens, and we have two. Back where we make the gyros and the chicken souvlaki, back on the other side of the food court, and then the main food line, all that equipment is brought in on, we used to do it on 2 53-foot trailers, now we use a smaller box trucks. So all that's got to get shipped in, everything you see here, the logistics is...
Do you have a logistics background?
I do, actually.
Okay. Yeah, well, no wonder they chose you. Yeah,
before I did this, I used to work for a very large company in the area, and so I that was one of my responsibilities.
Oh, they are lucky to have you.
Huge undertaking with all the food safety issues and everything that goes with that. That is amazing.
Well, we've been through. We got Rufus Edmiston was here, but he's headed out now. He's by phone. Mm. Do you know Rufus?
The name sounds familiar.
Rufus was the Attorney General and Secretary of State in North Carolina.
Oh, very good.
He is Mary. Mary Dumbasweep. I've been talking about Dumbalises all morning.
I told you you'd see him around.
Yeah, I'm so
Mary,
glad.
Everybody.
I'm so glad to see you.
Good to see you as well.
Oh, wow. So Rufus is on the phone. And he's headed to a funeral.
Mm.
But
did you say Mary?
No. Yeah, Mary Dumbalis just walked by.
Wonderful. What a great person.
Oh, I know. Two lawyers in that family. She was one of them. So the menu is quite extravagant.
I mean, it's a I think it's a reflection of what I would call our favorite Greek dishes, your traditional Greek dishes, as well as obviously like the handhelds, like, you know, the gyros and the chicken pitas. But everything that you see there, whether it's the pastries or things in a food court or the dinner, those are recipes that were brought down from other parishioners that did this fair, you know, the fair back 41 years ago.
Yeah.
In fact, I have a stack of folders in my office with all the previous information, including recipes and stuff like that.
Well, that
and
comes in handy.
It does. So we made some minor tweaks just to improve the process of stuff. But all these recipes that make this are things that we have. And obviously, the bigger we have gotten, the more difficult it is to make this in-house at the volume of people that we've got. So we work with some local restaurants and providers to help take our recipes to help us make all the food for this festival.
How about that? So we've been through the menu, but what about the times today for you will be open at 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock till 10.
Till 10. Wow. I bet things are rollicking at 10 o'clock tonight. What do you...
On a Saturday, we expect it to, especially with the weather going to be the way it is. And usually what ends up happening is people will, and we've got dancers going throughout the day as well, too, along with a live band.
Yeah.
So people will get their dinner, they'll sit down. And then we have a much larger taverna where we serve our Greek beer and our spirits, as well as domestic beer on tap, and also wine tasting. So that will end up getting busy as the night gets going.
Is there anything y'all didn't think of?
You know what? There's always something that comes up to bite you. Right? But when you have an event like this, takes a lot of people to put together.
Oh, absolutely.
And so you've got each booth lead and folks that know all the ins and outs, and they're the ones that really kind of help put this all together. All I do is herd cats. These guys are really the ones that do a lot of the lifting and the heavy labor.
But that's directing all of it. It's very,
it's
very hard.
That's a big part of it.
Well, we look forward to I want you to talk to us some more as we go along this morning. We've got a couple of more hours here. So
sure.
Please stop by as you can, and we'll continue talking about this
and
a little bit of gardening. Too.
All right.
Thank you, John, very
much. Thank you very much.
Or
appreciate
JC.
Thank you. Yeah. JC works. Thanks, guys.
All right. A lot of mics here this morning, so John was talking about that. A lot of Johns in the Greek community, and so he became JC. So we need to go to Joe on the phone. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
We're great. You can't believe how good it smells in the Grand Building here.
I could only imagine.
So how can we help you?
I'm going to give you just a couple of quick questions, and whatever you guys have time to answer me for, I will certainly appreciate. I've got a fig tree that I did a little trimming in the springtime, but as it's obviously kind of in full bloom now, I've got some low-hanging branches. I was wondering if I could trim a couple of them now because they're starting to bend and almost touch the ground. And with the fig tree and even a crepe myrtle, I get shoots that come up near, obviously off the roots into the lawn. Is there anything that can be done to help avoid that happening, especially with a crepe myrtle into the lawn area?
Yeah, that is so obnoxious. It's really hard to control. They're connected to the roots of the plant, so you can't really use a contact herbicide for something like that. I use a weed eater when they start coming up, but some of the plants, if it's not so prevalent. They usually are with crepe myrtles. Ann Clapp used to recommend that you cut those stalks, those shoots, down below ground level. I don't know if that helps or not. It may with some plants.
Yeah.
But the crepe myrtles just want to survive.
Yeah, that's probably not going to work with the crepe myrtle.
So what about the figs, trimming the figs and those shoots for the crepe myrtle?
It should be fine pruning. Doing light pruning now to the figs and the crepe myrtles.
Yeah, I mean, I got figs on. Now, are those figs going to stay, or are they going to are they going to fully develop this early in the season, or are they going to drop off? I know sometimes you get an early crop of figs and they drop off.
That's all depends on moisture.
We got plenty of moisture
this week. We definitely had that, but yeah, a lot of times the figs does that. In this area, normally one crop a year is what you're going to get on figs. My mother-in-law lived in Elizabeth City area, and she would get two crops each year.
No kidding.
But here, of course, any of it that you prune off, they will not develop any fruit on them. But that'll be gone. But yeah, just you can do some light pruning on the figs without any trouble at all.
And Rufus, do you have figs on your Celeste tree?
I have plenty of figs, and it depends on how many figs he wants. If he wants more figs, leave it on there until they ripen, then cut it off. And of course, you can't prune a fig tree too much. It just depends on whether he wants to have figs on that limb or not. If he's got plenty otherwise, let her go.
Okay. Yeah, if it's in the way of mowing or something, and it's you know,
yeah, you'll
you
have to sacrifice those.
Yeah, like I said, once you
when
cut
is the best? Yeah, when is a normal time, guys, for pruning a fig tree?
After they fruit,
right?
Yeah, right after the fruit.
Now on the crepe myrtle, I would just say have a sharp lawnmower. That's the only thing you can do. I have an ornamental cherry tree that does the same thing, and all I can do is just have sharp pruning things. I know of nothing to do, because as Mike said, if you put some kind of a herbicide, you're going to kill the tree.
Is there any kind of physical barrier that might work? I'm thinking about these big pads that you find in nursery applications.
Big what?
They're real thick, coarse pads that you find in nursery applications. I don't know. They probably wouldn't reach out far enough.
Yeah, can you block them out?
Yeah. I mean, you could do that, yeah. But
kind of
I don't know how big of area you got that you want to kill your turf. That's because that's going to, if you had a natural area underneath it, that would work. But usually figs, you can prune figs after they, you don't really prune them. You're just getting the dead out after you see what's leafed out in the spring, too. You just sort of clean them up. But, yeah, like Rufus said, they don't require a lot of pruning, and you don't want to do a lot of fertilizing on the figs either. They don't require a lot of fertilizer. But pruning them and pruning the crepe myrtles, of course, they bloom on this year's growth, so you don't have to worry about cutting off blooms on that. You can trim that back lightly now. I mean, I wouldn't do a hard prune, of course.
Does that help, Joe?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. Joel, can we talk to Ralph real quick? Okay, we lost Ralph. Ralph, call back, and we'll take a break and be back. We're at the Greek Festival here at the Jim Graham Building in the North Carolina State Fairgrounds. You've been to the Graham Building many times. Well, it is filled up with 60 tables. 1,200 people can be seated in here now for some of the best food you'll ever have. Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, they're building a new church, and this is a big annual event for them. Come join us here on the Weekend Gardener from WPTF. We're back at the Greek Festival at the North Carolina State Fairgrounds, and they're all setting up. 11 o'clock is when they open for lunch. They have big crowds here, but there's plenty of room. There are 1,200 seats, and friends, there is a lot of food, I'm sure, that's being cooked. And that's the first thing you'll notice when you walk into the Graham Building is that wonderful fragrance wafting. Now, I don't know that I really had a lot of Greek food when I was in Greece last year. We went to Greece for a short time. I was on a cruise, so went to Santorini for a little while, and we ported there near Athens, but that's where we caught the ship. But then we went up through the Aegean to Croatia and all of those Baltic country, or not the Baltic countries, but let's see, Croatia and can't even remember where I went. Across from Italy there, it's not far. But we went to a few places in Greece, but it went to Olympia, where the Olympic Games were, and that's unbelievable.
It's kind of awe-inspiring there.
It is. It's a beautiful little town, but on the outskirts are where the games were held, and there's all these stone platforms and figures and statues, and there's a field where they... where they raced, and it's just yeah. And the food, I don't think I had enough Greek food. Of course, we ate a lot on the ship, and they did have some Greek food there. But there's nothing like the authenticity of what you will get here. These folks have lived it. They are Greek, and you will get all of that you dreamed about, and whether it's the bistitsia, that is kind of like lasagna, a lot of cheeses, lamb, beef, so forth, and sweets. Yeah, the Greeks are famous for their sweets, and they have beer and wine too, so they really have it all here at the Greek festival.
And there's a real passion for them. When we were speaking earlier with
Manny,
yes, he was really excited to share what he had with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's part of the culture.
Yeah,
sharing and embracing the Greek culture. So Johnny, I asked Mike what he brought up the Colorado Beetle, but what are you hearing from your folks up in Granville and Person County?
Mike, for some reason, I've gotten more calls about bamboo control this year than I think I have in my whole career with, not that it's been that long, but...
Did they plant the bamboo, or was it
usually
just
it's encroaching from neighbors?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, especially one particular.
It never goes away.
Yeah, it's a tough one to control.
There's a place on Lake Boone Trail a lot there. When I was at NC State in 1970, as a freshman, I remember for some reason going down Lake Boone Trail and seeing that big stand of bamboo, and it's still there.
Yeah. It's very hard to control, and unfortunately, if you have it your neighbor has it on their property, it's, you know, you're just trying to keep it from coming onto yours. You can't eradicate it because it's still on, you can't eradicate what's not on your property. But it's a difficult thing, and there's several different ways to do it, but it's not something that you're going to do in 1 year. You know, it's a 2 to 3 year process to try to do that. But I actually had a friend in down in I want to say Pender County, but it's in the eastern near the coast, and he had some bamboo, and he paved a parking lot and had like 20 feet of pavement. And he had bamboo on one side, and he figured the pavement would stop it. He had it took several years, but he had bamboo come up on 20 feet away under the pavement. Bamboo came up. So it's very, very aggressive.
Rufus, you don't have any bamboo on your property, do you? Have we lost Rufus?
We may have lost Rufus.
Oh. But, I said, I'm Nandina.
Nandina.
Okay. You got Nandina, but not...
Heavenly bamboo.
Heavenly
bamboo. Not quite as aggressive as the bamboo. But
yeah.
That one can spread as well and spreads with the fruit.
And it's not going away either.
No.
I don't know anything. I mean, once you planted it... And it'll seed out.
But I like the winter berries. I leave a little bit.
Yeah, they are beautiful. They are beautiful.
And the smaller, the dwarf plants that you put out in the bright sun, and they just have those deep bright reds in the wintertime. They're gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. They don't flower, and of course they don't have the fruit on them.
Yeah, but they put everything into those leaves.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's in the family. But it's amazing. You're looking at plants and how many different plants are in the same family that you wouldn't think of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Daylily is in the myrtle family, for instance.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's. We're back at the Graham Building, the Jim Graham Building, here on the campus of the North Carolina State Fairgrounds. And, the fragrance here. It is, if you are not hungry when you walk in, this will bring you into reality. There's so many people represented here, so many organizations that are involved. One is Habitat for Humanity. Rick Beach is with us representing Habitat. What a fine organization. We've done a lot of remotes over the years from some of your Restore operations, which are fantastic.
Yeah.
And we certainly admire all that you did. We talked about on those occasions about the late President Carter, who was in a lot of ways the face of Habitat.
Absolutely.
Because of the work that he and his wife did in helping to build homes. But you have a connection with Holy Trinity and this festival too.
Yes, I do. Well, first of all, thank you for being here, and thank you for broadcasting live at our Restores. They are a tremendous source of resource for financial resources for us. We have 10 of them are across the triangle. So one way your audience can keep supporting Habitat is go to our Restores, donate, and attend. And thank you for broadcasting that.
Absolutely.
Yes. I work with Habitat for Humanity in Wake County, and I'm VP of Faith Relations, so I have the privilege of engaging the faith community with Habitat. Uh-huh. And Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox are our tremendous partner. Through this festival, they've been supporting us for basically every year of our existence for 40 years. Proceeds from these festivals go to Habitat for Humanity. And this church is amazing. They pull this off with volunteers year after year. It's monumental. I can't think of a church that could, other than them, that could pull that off. There's no paid staff out here from the church. They're pulling it off by volunteers.
Absolutely.
So they have generated, since 1995, $285,000 for Habitat Wake through these festivals. And that doesn't capture it all because they supported us before we were digital. So there's probably $15,000 that were not tracked in our digital record. So I can safely say they've supported us with $300,000 over the years. So come to the festival, come to our Restores, come to festivals. I love coming here, and the proceeds help us. They also not only provide money, but they build with us, the church, and they have leveraged other Orthodox churches in the area to come work beside them for an annual Orthodox build. So we can't thank the festival, the Holy Trinity Greek Church, enough for doing this. And Habitat's mission is to house families that lack affordable housing. We have an affordable housing crisis in Wake County. One out of four families lack affordable housing. That means that they are paying more than 30% of their income for housing. That means they have less money for minor things like food, health care, transportation. And we have a crisis. So come to the festival to support Habitat to address this crisis by building homes, repairing homes, and advocating for affordable housing.
Very good. You're building houses in this area as we speak.
Oh yes, yes. We are one of the larger affiliates in the Habitat Network in the country. We have three neighborhoods going on right now. We'll build around 44 homes this year, repair around 80, and through our advocacy help hundreds of other families obtain or keep in their affordable housing. So volunteers drive our ministry as well as this festival. We have 30,000 volunteers a year just in Wake and Johnson counties that support us in building homes and working in our restores and advocating for affordable housing. So join us. If you're not already building with us, please join us. It's a lot of fun. You get to work beside home buyers that work hard to get into their program. They purchase these homes, and it helps them build wealth and help them be able to have sustained their families. If there's generational poverty, we stop that with building equity in homes. The families work beside the volunteers to build the homes, and they purchase them through affordable means.
Rick, thank you so much for what you do and for being here today with us.
Thank you for having me, and sure. Come to the festival. Opa!
Opa! All right. Rick Beach is with us, and we're gonna talk to Ashley Herring from the Beef Council coming up here on WPTF, talk a lot more gardening. We are at the Greek Festival here at the Jim Graham Building at the State Fairgrounds. I'm sure that Commissioner Graham probably attended a few of these while in office, and it's always a treat to be here, especially when you're all of this food is cooking, wafting through, and we're being tempted by the the sweets. We have a plate of sweets here. So we'll be back and talk more about this and a lot of other things on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. At the Greek Festival, Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church has been putting this on for 41 years, and it is magnificent. Come out, 11 o'clock is when the doors will open here at the Graham Building of the State Fairgrounds, and come ready to eat. They'll also have beer and various entrees and sweets, too. We have little container of sweets here that everybody's eyeing. A couple of imbibe, but you know, we'll get to it eventually. Rufus, how was your pastry? Well, you had some baklava or something?
I had the fruit-filled nut-filled.
Yeah, fruit-filled nut-filled something. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Ashley Herring is with us, the director of the Consumer Information Division of North Carolina's Beef Council, and it's the end of beef month, and who doesn't love beef? You brought, Ashley, welcome to the Weekend Gardener, by the way.
Thanks.
You brought some flyers here that are most interesting. I mentioned to you that I worked for a summer as, I think, my senior year and going to NC State, I worked as a butcher's assistant, and that was that was a lot of fun, actually, and I learned a lot. And there, it's just unbelievable how many cuts of meat there are. I didn't realize that. We didn't have a chart back there at the butcher's counter of all of these cuts, but there, you can do anything you want with beef, and you mentioned off the air crock pot. A lot of people have a harried pace, and they want to use a crock pot. They can start it in the morning, and it's slow cooking. And there's so many recipes. I hope you, before you leave, will share a recipe. But there are a lot of things we can do for beef. You know, a lot of protein, very healthy. And the beef industry does hundreds of millions of dollars as part of the agricultural industry, which is the biggest industry in North Carolina. But the beef industry is a big part of that.
Certainly. So we're very proud of our farmers and the hard work that they do because, you know, certainly it's a 7-day-a-week lifestyle to raise these animals and care for them and ultimately provide us this wonderful protein that's so good for us. I think there's a lot of diversity and versatile things that you can do with beef. We kind of inadvertently fenced ourselves into dinner, but I think breakfast is also a really good place where you can start getting that protein in early in the day. You know, have like a great steak and eggs, kind of Super
yes.
Bowl. And then, you know.
With French fries.
Yeah.
I've had it. It's good. Yeah. I mean, You can get out and grill this in the morning. I've done that before. It's a real treat. The pastizia, I know there are a lot of Greek dishes that include beef. I know the pastizia, which is very much like lasagna, has beef incorporated into it, and the gyros and so forth. There's so many things here at this festival that utilize beef.
Absolutely. You know, it's such a quality protein, and it's actually known as a complete protein because it has all 9 of the essential amino acids that our body needs. And that's, you know, something we think about beef. It's so good tasting, but it's also really good for us. And that protein and iron and zinc, those things are really important as we age. They prevent muscle loss. They help muscle growth. So it's certainly something that you can enjoy and know that it's good for you as well.
There are there's so many lean cuts of meat. I know the industry has worked for that. Farmers have worked on that too, and they can be delicious and good for you and make a big part of a meal.
That's right. Yes. So we have, through genetics and through, you know, selecting for those traits of leanness, you know, our beef is still really good tasting. The marbling, of course, is the flavor and the juiciness.
Right.
But you certainly have a lot of lean cuts and things that, you know, are applicable to those that are, you know, trying to have a leaner diet or working out or being healthy, and choosing those cuts is certainly part of that.
Well, give us an example of some of the lean meals that utilize beef, some of the ways we could utilize beef.
Sure. So if you're looking at the grocery in the meat case, you will see some of those cuts have the little American Heart Association, the little heart logo, and those cuts have been certified lean. A lot of cuts that come from the loin are in that category. But certainly, you know, as you look at the meat case and all of the varieties of cuts, you know, things that are leaner, that have less marbling, will meet those requirements. But it's so good that, you know, we can get the satisfying protein, and it keeps you full longer. And so that's part of, you know, choosing this healthy lifestyle. You want to feel full. You don't want to be, you know, hungry at 2 o'clock and looking for the snacks.
That's true. Very true. With protein, I don't know if you have a recipe off the top of your head, something you love to fix for your family.
One of the things that I love, and this is a cut that's really popular in California, it's called a tri-tip, and that's sirloin. But that's something we do as if we see that, we always grab it. We'll do a chimichurri to accompany it. It's just amazing. You can get several meals off of that. One of the things that we think about with cooking and, like you say, a fast-paced lifestyle, if you cook once, then you can have 2 or 3 meals. So maybe that leftover roast, that tri-tip roast, you can put it on a salad for lunch the next day. You're kind of, you know, thinking ahead and getting your meal plans ready for the whole week.
Yeah. A breakfast taco, a beef taco, would be wonderful for you to incorporate some eggs there, a little extra protein. There's so many things. What else would you like us to know about beef? Talk about the huge industry it is in North Carolina. I don't think people realize.
Absolutely. So many of our farmers in North Carolina will raise row crops, and they may also have pork or poultry, and cattle really complement that because it's such a good fit. They have the cattle graze on pasture. North Carolina is what's known as a cow-calf state. So we're the beginning of the beef life cycle. We have mama cows. They raise one calf per year, and the majority of their lives, they're in this pasture, they're grazing. And so, you know, North Carolina, we have such a, you know, agriculture is our number one industry, and we can grow things from Christmas trees to blueberries and beef cattle and also dairy. So it fits very well with a lot of farmers' business plans and their, you know, future planning and their generational, you know, planning to pass their farm down to their kids or their grandkids. Cattle are just a perfect fit there.
Ashley, thank you very much for taking the time to stop by and bringing us up to date on the beef industry and how good it is for us.
Thank you
for consume beef every day.
That's right. Yeah, thank you for having me. One of the things I did want to share, if you're looking for recipes or nutrition information, please visit beefatswhatsfordinner.com. Of course, we have all the social platforms, Instagram and Facebook with that as well. But there's some great tips and great information on that site, as well as videos and things like that.
It is a great site. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a nice weekend.
You too.
All right. Ashley Herring with the Beef Council here in North Carolina, the WPTF Weekend Gardener. Joel, I'm sorry I was talking over you. You said how long? 6 minutes. Okay. All right. Well, we'll utilize those 6 minutes here. Guys, and Rufus, are you on your way, sir?
Yes. I listened to the lady from the Beef Council.
Yeah,
and I grew up on a beef. We raised perfect cattle.
That's right. I'm sorry you're not here, Rufus. Rufus was pointing out he grew up on a beef operation many years ago. So
well, it was a small farm, but for the mountains, a herd of 40 Herefords. And I remember
pretty 140. That's not bad.
No, I said 40.
Oh, 40. Well, 40's good.
Yeah.
I mean, and those cows had the shorter legs on one side, didn't they?
That's correct.
I don't know what breed that was, but that's what my wife is always. She was a dairy farmer's daughter. That's what she always pointed out in the mountains, was they all had cows had shorter legs on one side. So, had to be careful how they stand. Oh, well. All of this is overwhelming. The beef and the Greek food is just, I am so hungry right now.
Yeah.
I may have to go after the kitchen. We may have to raid the kitchen this morning, Rufus. So, you just got a, I'm sorry you didn't get more of a meal, my friend.
Well, my friend Tara is with me, and she believes that the cows have shorter legs on one side. She said, "I didn't know that."
Yeah, my wife, I believe it to this day. And if you ride through the mountains, you see a cow on the hill. I mean, how else could they do it? They can't. They're so top heavy.
They would topple over if they didn't have a shorter leg going around the top of the mountain.
Some have shorter legs on the right side. Some have shorter legs on the left side.
I thought they were telescopic, so they could turn
around.
No,
they don't. There's none of that. That may be a hybrid.
They just got to keep moving in one direction.
Just got to keep going around the mountain in the same direction. All right.
Yeah. So, that's next time you're going through the mountains, please notice that.
Well, sometimes they got to back up if they don't have the right leg on the right side.
They're always, depending on what if they're born with right side short legs or left side short legs, they have to point one direction.
Yeah, that's
they
correct.
Can't turn around.
Change mountains.
Yeah, unless they're transported someplace else.
See,
I made up a whole skit here.
Well, that's back in the day when you had... the Herefords had horns, and we had to do dehorning. And Johnny and Mike, I was real happy when it came along. You had what we call polled Herefords.
Polled Herefords.
Polled meant they didn't grow horns because dehorning was a nasty, bloody mess.
Yeah. Johnny, have you done any dehorning?
We did when I was young. My dad used to get some steers, and we'd raise them out, and we did have to dehorn some of them.
You have cattle now, don't you?
We do. Ours are polled Herefords. We had one bull one time that would, we had some calves that they had, they called them, I think, skurs or something. They're just small. They never did develop into actual horns. And they were steers, so we sent them on down.
Get out there, old hacksaw.
So did you do any bullfighting out there in the field, Rufus? I'm sure you and your brothers walked up to something all the time.
There was another procedure, too, that we did along with the dehorning, which is removing a certain anatomy of
I would not. I don't know why in the world you're going there, but that's as far as we'll go. Well, let's get back to the short legs on the cows. The northwest cow.
Yeah.
At any rate. So Rufus, let me ask you what is blooming right now. Besides the Coosa dogwood and some roses, what's blooming in your landscape?
Hydrangeas,
yeah.
Beautiful.
Oh, wow, yeah. Last week we saw the huge oak leaf hydrangeas in Rufus's yard that are blooming. Huge panicles on them.
I saw the first Rebecca opened up this year in our landscape. This week.
Rebecca
Herta. I don't think the Rebecca Fugata had started blooming yet, but the Rebecca Herta.
Okay. When would you light me out, Joel? Got it. All right, we'll be back, Brother Rufus and Johnny and Mike coming up, Michael. Here on WPTS Weekend Garden. We're at the Greek Festival at the State Fairgrounds, and we're at the Graham Building. And it smells so good.